Hey everyone, welcome to the Tribe Culture Life podcast, where our stories and our lives matter. I'm your host, Brittany Montgomery, and I invite you to listen in a few times a month as I chat about issues that we as members of the Black and POC communities face every day. I'll be sharing stories and perspectives that matter to you, from raising children to relationships, entrepreneurship, and traveling, and all aspects in between. If any of those topics interest you, you are definitely my tribe, and you are definitely in the right place. How are you doing? Thank you, first of all, for joining me today. Yeah, good.
Okay.
Great. So kind of jumping right in, number one, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. And I really want to start off with more about your journey, kind of becoming or achieving your PhD in oncology. I think that is such a huge achievement. And why oncology? What kind of drew you to that field specifically?
It was kind of a process. So when I was a kid, I was always a very good student, but I excelled more in science and math. I just was very good in those areas. When I was in high school, I actually wanted to be a computer scientist because I loved computers. I got my first computer at 12. I loved computers. And I was like, what is something I could do where I just sit in front of a computer all day and work with computers? And so I wanted to kind of meld my love of computers and math and science and be a computer scientist. But then in junior year, I took like a C++ programming class. And I was like, I cannot make this work. This is not for me. Because I don't know if you know anything about C++ programming, but it's basically
very slightly from my husband, and I know enough to know it's, yeah.
It's basically you're just writing all this code, and you write in 50-page code, and you put a semicolon where a colon's supposed to be on page 10, and your whole 50-page code doesn't run. And I was like, I can't do this. This is not for me. But again, love science. So I kind of fell back on the life sciences, so biology and chemistry, which I also loved. So I was like, let me just try to go into this area. So I kind of moved more into life sciences, went to college. I'm a proud HBCU alum. I went to Xavier in New Orleans because I'm from Louisiana. So that is a big MD, pre-med MD science school. So that kind of nurtured my love of life sciences. Never wanted to be a medical doctor, but I really wanted to be a researcher in the life sciences. So that became my passion. I just had this idea I would go to graduate school and do research because I love that. And so I did undergraduate research looking at, I had a mentor, I was in the MARC program, which is a Minority Access to Research Careers. It's a program for undergraduates that are interested in research careers. So I was in that program. I did research. Xavier has a College of Pharmacy. My mentor was in that College of Pharmacy. So I did a lot of work. I think my project was in looking at endocrine disruptors in the water systems of Louisiana and how that may cause cancer. And so I started becoming interested in cancer. I was working in the College of Pharmacy. My mentor had a pharmacology degree. So I kind of went that direction. And so after I finished at Xavier, I went to graduate school at Emory, which is why I moved to Atlanta. I've been in Atlanta since. So I went to Emory for graduate school and I did my PhD in molecular and systems pharmacology with an emphasis in cancer pharmacology. That's kind of my journey and how it happened. And so that's how I kind of got into cancer research. I was always just became very interested in how cancer develops, how cancer works, the pharmacology of cancer and cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. And so that's where a lot of our research comes from, a lot of my background comes from.
Got you. And so you're on your website, you mentioned your work as a medical communication specialist.
Yes.
So what does that mean exactly?
Actually, I had this whole dream of I'm going to be a bench research scientist. But then that kind of changed when I was in grad school and started doing my dissertation research. And I realized that though I love the learning about the concepts behind science and oncology, I didn't want to be at the bench and pipette and do all those type of like preclinical things at the bench. I didn't want to do research anymore. But what I, again, loved about what I was doing was learning about new concepts, writing, because you know, when you're in graduate school and writing your dissertation, you're also writing. You're also learning how to communicate, learning how to write, learning how to dispense concepts into a flow of story. So I liked doing all of that. So toward the end of my graduate school career, I started being involved in. Emory had like a science writer newsletter for the science department that we write things. And I started going to, we had quote unquote alternative career seminars, because the traditional path of a PhD is either bench science or bench research, or you go work at a university and you become a professor. That's the traditional path. But they started being these alternative careers, which is not really alternative because most PhDs aren't actually doing research, because there are so many PhDs that graduate, so many positions. Most PhDs do other things outside of that realm, be it medical communications like I do, or patent attorneys, or they work in business, like pharmaceutical industry, biotech, more in the business side. So PhDs are like doing a lot of things that are just not in this traditional area. So I started going to these alternative career seminars, and I learned about science and medical writing, which is, there's many different types of medical writers. I do more medical communication. So I work in an agency, and we are a partner strategic agency for pharmaceutical companies. So I work on client teams, and our companies that we partner with are oncology companies. And we basically, I'm in two different paths because my company is two different areas. So publications, I do that. And I also do medical affairs. So for publications, that is publications, medical communications is when all those nice journal articles you hear about in the news from the New England Journal of Medicine, we write those. We help the pharmaceutical companies write up their clinical trial findings. So a medical writer is behind that article in the New England Journal of Medicine or Nature or Lancet or whatever. We help write those things, and we help write and put together abstracts, posters, things for medical conferences, again, to disseminate their clinical trial findings. I'm also in medical affairs, medical communications in that route, because pharmaceutical companies also, let's say they have a phase 3 trial of some agent for something. It could be beyond cancer, obviously. They also do these activities called advisory boards. It's basically like a focus group. So they basically get, they could be for different reasons, but they'll get a group of physicians together, oncologists together. They could be academic oncologists, a more high level oncologist, could be more community oncologists or community doctors. So they get them, or it could be a mix. They get them together and to basically say, at different points of their clinical trial, they could say, we have this data we just presented. What do you feel about it? Do you think this will be helpful for the patients you see? Do you see these type of patients that this trial would address? What are your concerns about this agent in this trial? What are your concerns about this data? Do you think this is good data? When can you use this data? It's basically a focus group of physicians. So we help develop the content for that. We help give strategy of maybe you should consider this and this and this, and put together the programs for them on that end as well. So we do a lot of different medcom, med writing strategy for pharmaceutical companies.
That is fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing. I never knew that there was so much background that goes into the journals and the peer-reviewed studies and all of this information that I feel like now we're all probably a lot more familiar
now
with.
Now people are more aware of it. So we've always been doing this.
Y'all are like the unsung heroes. So we appreciate it.
So that's what I do.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like probably in your field, that's one of the fields that probably still lacks a lot of diversity. Have you seen that kind of change over the years as you've moved through your industry?
So in graduate school, I was fortunate because Emory at the time, our DGS, which is Director of Graduate Studies, he was very enthusiastic and pushing for diversity. So I would say, I think it was the class before me, and my class was the first that had, and these classes are small. My class was probably like 9 students in my graduate class in my program. But we probably had more Black and Brown students. So I think it depends on the program, depends, because there are probably more Black and Brown students in certain areas of science than others, in non-science, obviously, than in science. But one thing I would note that I did mention, I mean, obviously we know it's probably in less Black and Brown people training to be scientists. But what is also big is that it's not a lot of women So I have a number of women in my class. I think that is changing. We're getting more women in science. But it was interesting that we probably had more women in my graduate school program as a whole. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the professors and the ones training us, it was not many women at all. It was all men, which I guess there's a change there too, with men versus women in science, as well as black and brown versus white counterparts. And moving up in my career, obviously, is less and less. And my company is probably 5% of us that are in medical communications that are black or brown. So it's not a lot of us.
Wow. Yeah, you speak to a really good point, too, about the need for diversity when it comes to black and brown and also women. So the need for diversity, but also the need for diversity in positions of authority, right?
Yes,
people
exactly.
that are in charge and they're training the next generation. That's mm-hmm. really important.
Yeah, which is why I do have a number since I went to Xavier.
Right.
So a number of my classmates back in college, a lot of them are physicians or dentists or in the science field. And I also have some friends who are in the science field and are PhDs as well. And so we talk among ourselves all the time how important it is to go back and mentor, to show our face, to say we're here. You may not see us everywhere, but we are here.
Exist.
We exist. So I do try to go back and find opportunities where I can show my face, talk about my experience to show that we're there, we're here. You won't be alone if you want to enter this arena. I recently went back to Emory a couple of years ago to talk about, because the same DGS, he's no longer DGS, but he's over minority program at Emory for college students that are interested in going into science. And so he asked me to come and speak and kind of talk about my experiences in medical writing. Because again, it is an area that a lot of people don't realize is a career path.
And what's that experience like? I love that because the representation is so important. And I think to hear from someone firsthand, like, no, like you said, we exist and you too can do this if this is something that you're interested in. And so what are those experiences like when you get to go back and talk to the students and kind of tell them about your experience?
Again, I hit up on all the high points that I am, because I mean, I haven't mentioned this, but I am first generation college student. I didn't grow up with means at all. I grew up in a small town that, if you think about it, still kind of segregated to this day in Louisiana. Very small town, not a lot of opportunities. I'm first generation college student. I literally did well in school and got a full scholarship to college. That was probably the only way I could have gone to Xavier, because Xavier is a private school. And I talk about how I'm one of few that pursued this path where I was, because again, not a lot of us there, but it could happen. You can do it. It's nothing you can't do. We're here. We're here to support. There's a support system in place and there's opportunities. You don't have to limit yourself. Whatever you want to do, you can do. And so I hit up on all those points and then again, open their or expand their horizon on career opportunities that they may not know have existed, that they may excel at, that may tap into some strength that they have or love that they have or interest they have in their own current educational path. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hit up on all those and say that you too can do it. But the last time I went and spoke at Emory, I had a couple of girls come up to me and say that they're interested in doing what I'm doing. And so I told them that I'm here if you ever had any questions, and I gave them some advice on how to make that happen.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Love to hear it. Love to see it.
Yep.
Hey, y'all. So if you're listening to this episode, I know you're my tribe, and I'm 100% sure you're as passionate about supporting Black and POC-owned businesses as I am. Have you ever gone to purchase something or look for a service provider and had to jump on the Googler or wade through Facebook groups filled with spam and unrelated ads to find what you're looking for? Well, I created the Black-owned Spotlight Group to help alleviate some of that drama. Join our community where customers just like you shout out their favorite Black and POC-owned businesses with real reviews and positive experiences. Find what you're looking for through a quick search or shout out your own favorite Black or POC-owned business. Word of mouth is still huge for lots of small businesses. They need our help now more than ever, and a quick shout out is a great way to help ensure they'll be around for years to come. Ready to join us? Go to alldaybrittany.com/black-owned-spotlight for more info. And now back to the show. We connected last year in, yes. I think it was the YouTube and Black Girl Bloggers group, something like that.
When yes, you I started your... a new blog.
Oh, yay. Yeah. So we're going to get into all of that. And what really kind of piqued my interest was the clinical blueprint, which we're also going to chat about.
Yes.
So I'm super excited. And of course, we're talking about right now, definitely working through our mistrust, specifically in, I think, in the Black community, with the medical community. We have a lot of issues. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this chat with you specifically, obviously, because of your background. So I feel like, let me talk to someone that has experience with all of this. This would be a really good convo. But I've seen it a lot kind of come to a head in the last couple of months now with the vaccine.
Yes.
And so, you know, when I was kind of doing a little bit of research, seeing with the maternal death rates among Black mothers, and then, of course, the COVID death rates among Black men, women, and children, we, of course, are much higher than everyone else. And now with the vaccination rates, our community is being vaccinated at a much lower rate than everyone else. And I think some of that is attributed to lack of access. Some of the communities, they don't have access to the vaccine like everyone else does. But I think some of it is also attributed to just mistrust, a lack of understanding of how it works. And then just a mistrust for, even if you do talk to a doctor and they explain it to you, well, you know, you can't trust everything the doctors say because they have an ulterior motive. And so I really just wanted to kind of chat with you, kind of just give me your initial thoughts on how we can start to work through that.
That's a million-dollar question. I don't know. I've been in many of Facebook.
Yes.
Many of Facebook, I would say altercation. That sounds wasn't that extreme.
Intense discussion.
But, yes, intense discussion about COVID and the vaccine and everything. Because as you mentioned, there is a mistrust there. And some of it is not even obviously a firsthand mistrust in terms of something particular hasn't happened, but it's right. Stories that have been circulated. It's historical context, things in the past that comes back. In this time, though, never may have come up before, but comes back into this discussion. And so it is very difficult. I know, and there's no easy answer, because I think if there was an easy answer, obviously we would have conquered this by now.
Right.
But there is a lot of mistrust. And some of it is well-founded, because as you say, I don't think a lot of physicians take our concerns seriously.
Yeah.
They don't try to sometimes make us understand things or come down to our level. Or I've even been in situations where I feel like a physician has given me bad advice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not a physician, but I'm knowledgeable about science and things, mm-hmm. and clinical trials and the pharmaceutical process and pharmacy and drugs. So some things I question, for instance, I've had, and this is a big thing, because I've just spoken to a blind sister of mine who is a physician, and she was posting about gynecologists and the whole issue. I don't know if you're aware of the whole issue with like African-American women and fibroids, and then gynecologists suggesting hysterectomies when it's not even something that it should be on the table as an option.
Wow. No.
Oh, are you not aware of this? Yeah,
no.
That is a thing. And I've had experience where I've had a fibroid. It was just one. It wasn't even affecting my fertility or giving me any kind of adverse events, which warrants just a simple removal. But I was told to consider a hysterectomy. This was when I was in my early 30s. So I thought that was ludicrous. But there are some women who take that advice because a doctor is telling them.
Yeah.
But that is just is ludicrous. So there's some warranted issues there. And some women who figured out that this is crazy, this is ludicrous, which then feeds into this mistrust that I should not believe doctors.
Mm-hmm. You have one incident and then
you want incidents, or someone
else.
Or someone in your family, or mm-hmm. someone you've heard of. So this is the cycle of mistrust. So it's very difficult to tease that apart. But I tell people, don't get defensive when someone like a professional is explaining an option or telling you something or explaining a new concept, be a medical advocate for yourself and learn what you can about yourself. Ask questions. I know a lot of people do not ask questions, but ask questions and try to understand the problem and the potential solution. So with COVID, I know a lot of people kind of connect COVID and the clinical trials with the vaccine to
Tuskegee. Yeah, that's what my husband always brings up.
Yeah. What I tell people, the missing piece there, and again, I try not to come at it telling people what to do,
right,
but more like empowering people to understand context, understand concepts, so that you can make a more informed decision for yourself. Because I don't want to tell you to disregard Tuskegee and run and take the vaccine, even though that's what I believe, but I don't want to come at it that way. But I tell people that, what was the issues with Tuskegee? The issue with Tuskegee is that there was no informed consent. There was no explanation of what was happening. So basically in Tuskegee, they had this rampant syphilis in the community. And so they decided to, without the consent of many Black, especially men, to not treat them when there's a treatment available or go against some sort of protocol, right? So that's the issue in Tuskegee. Where are we now with clinical trials? There's been so many things put in place with clinical trials that what happened with Tuskegee, it would be very, very difficult for the same thing to happen. There's so many instances of informed consent. So with any clinical trial, and some of this came about because of Tuskegee, you have to give informed consent, written informed consent. You have to be explained every option and everything about the clinical trial. You can also withdraw consent at any time. Every clinical trial has to have a written and formal protocol. Most clinical trials have multiple sites that have multiple review boards that have to review the process and consent forms, the protocol. Tuskegee is kind of like one single site study. Most clinical trials now, like with COVID, multiple sites, COVID trials, each trial had at least 40,000 participants.
Yeah, I think there was one near us about an hour and a half.
Yeah. So there are multiple site trials. Each site has to have their own review board. So a lot of these problems with like Tuskegee doesn't happen. So I feel like if someone would hear things like that, that there's things that came out of Tuskegee that would prevent something like Tuskegee happening in clinical trials, then I feel like empowering with that type of knowledge may help mistrust. Because another issue because of that is the lack of participation of Black and Brown people in clinical trials,
right?
Because they mistrust the system, which is actually detrimental to us, because since we're not represented in clinical trials, you don't know a particular agent, you don't know how it affect us specifically. So it's another kind of cycle. So think of it like there's agent X and it goes in clinical trials for something that affects the Black community. But that community mistrusts the clinical trial process, but they're not involved in clinical trials. They don't sign up to be a part of clinical trials. So in that instance, number one, you may not benefit from this new investigational agent and all the perks of being in a clinical trial. You get monitored constantly by doctors. You get free medical care, things of that nature that are benefits of being on a clinical study, in a clinical trial. So we don't get that. Then it goes through the agent X goes through the clinical trial process. We're not represented. So if something specifically will affect us because of our specific lifestyle or socioeconomic status or genetics, it won't show up in a clinical trial because we're not represented in a clinical trial.
Represented, yeah.
It gets approved. It goes on the market. It's something that affects our community. So it is prescribed to our community. But something happens. Some adverse event happens specifically to us because it wasn't documented in clinical trial. So then another point of mistrust in the Black community, because something happened to them that they didn't feel, or we feel that it was something that went wrong in that clinical trial process, or something went wrong in the doctor's advice or something like that. it's also another cycle that could be detrimental to us in that respect.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It definitely makes sense. And you brought up a good point about, like you said, I think the different agents kind of interacting differently based just on your genetic makeup. It reminded me of this YouTube video that I was watching a while back. She's like a skincare doctor. And she was talking about one of these ingredients. Lord, I can't remember. It was back when I was trying to come up with my skincare routine. So I was Googling all this stuff. Anyway, it was an ingredient that is supposed to help with hyperpigmentation. Yeah. And she was explaining kind of how it works. Generally, in white people and fairer skin people, it can help with hyperpigmentation. It helps brighten and even out, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But if you use it at a too high of a level, it can actually increase hyperpigmentation because of the way our skin produces melanin and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was just saying there's disparity between that knowledge and you have
dermatologists.
Yes. Thank you. But you have dermatologists that are still recommending this for Black and brown people, and it's not necessarily as effective for us. There are other options. And so, of course, she was going down the list of the different options. And I thought, wow, that is such a good point. And so I immediately thought of that last summer when, of course, you see it, like you said, on social media, oh, I'm not doing that. And, you know, I get it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I mean, I didn't participate in a clinical trial, so I'm not judging anyone that, you know, said I wasn't going to do that. But it's interesting to see because it's like you said, it's a never ending cycle. It's we don't know for sure what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's frustrating and there's no simple solution. But I just tell people to be knowledgeable and try to research, though I know maybe that's just easy for me being a scientist because I know a lot of people aren't aware of even trusted, what are the trusted sources of information? So it may be difficult.
And I think it makes it hard too, because everyone presents their information or their thought, they are an authority and sometimes they're not. And so you still have to like,
you see those discussions on Facebook when they're talking about, oh, you got that Facebook degree. Is that what?
Yes. You got your YouTube, you got your master's in YouTube. Yeah. I'm like, and that gets me so frustrated, you know, when you're engaging in the conversations, because at one side of it, I'm like, that is not correct.
Yeah. I mean, like I told you, I had to stop myself because I got into many Facebook intense debates.
Yeah. Yeah.
When they were trying to tell me things that were, I am an actual scientist and I'm telling you that is incorrect. I have a whole PhD.
They will argue you down.
They will argue me down. And I'm like, I literally have a degree in science and I know what you're saying is incorrect.
Yes. Definitely. That is such an interesting
thing. So I stepped away. I stopped. One of my New Year's resolutions was not getting into any COVID discussions. If I see someone talking about COVID,
you're like, oh, la, 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 la,
la, la, la, don't see it. Yep. I don't even read further.
Yes. Yes. I got you. And so I also want to say here too, for anyone that's listening, I do understand. And I think we both understand that there is, the distrust is very much rightfully earned, right?
Yeah,
so there's been a lot done to Black and, I mean, I feel like that could probably be like a whole separate podcast.
Man, a lot of stuff done to us.
In the name of medical advancement even. And it's just, you go down that rabbit hole of research and history and it's quite frightening.
I mean, stuff I was using in my research studies are just from like HeLa cells. I'm sure you heard of HeLa cells. Cells that we use in research, which were in effect stolen from a Black woman.
Henrietta Lacks? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Yes, stolen from a Black woman. And I'm using them in my research and they were usually stolen without her consent, which was, back in the day, was a common practice not to get consent, which was problematic, but especially for Black and brown people that they disregarded constantly. So yes, and it goes back, way back.
Definitely. And so we know that at the end of the day, the onus is on the medical professionals, right? So the doctors, therapists, dermatologists, all that stuff to kind of try to help bridge the gap. But I also understand that the only behavior, I mean, of course, you can advocate and talk to people and share our experiences, but the only behavior that we can control is our own. And so I really kind of wanted to focus on what are some things that we can do to advocate for ourselves and just kind of ensure that we're getting the best care possible. I know you mentioned before researching and making sure you ask all of the questions.
Yes, that is key. Because I know even I have an elderly mother, and I don't know if you guys have this same issue, but with my mom, it goes to the doctor. I'm not there. My family's back in Louisiana. I'm not there with my mom to go to the doctor with her. So I talk to her on the phone maybe afterwards, and I'm like, what did the doctor say? And she'll tell me the doctor said XYZ. And I'm like, okay, so follow-up question, ABC. And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, but did you ask this question? Did you ask this follow-up question? I don't know. This is just what the doctor told me. Follow-up questions are important. I know a lot of people just listen to the doctor, then walk out of the office. Ask follow. If you don't understand something, you don't leave until they make you understand that. You make you understand that point. That's what they're there for. Mm-hmm. So I would say, yes, always ask questions. Try to understand anything. Make them explain it to you. Find resources. Learn and educate yourself. It's very important. I think people spend a lot of time, let's say, and I'm guilty of this too, so this is not an indictment on anyone, but no ins and outs of pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
But don't put the same level of attention to learning about things about your health, things that are going on in the medical community, science, news, because this is also affecting your life and your health. And it's important to you to also put attention on kind of understanding something that's going on with you health-wise, may impact you health-wise, like COVID and the COVID vaccine. So learn about what's going on. And I think because COVID has permeated, I mean, the entire world and all our lives because of it's on a global scale now, I think people are a little more educated about it and educated about it, know what a vaccine is, probably didn't know what a vaccine or in terms of how it worked before. But I still feel like there's a ways to go because, again, there's people on Facebook talking about, I'm not getting this vaccine, but not understanding that there's limited options otherwise. If you don't get the vaccine, which I mean, I guess I understand because I understand that to a certain level. I understand that in clinical trials, there's only FDA emergency use authorization, which I also try to educate people and tell people that this is a normal thing that happens. This happened in the past. The FDA has this in place because of situations like this, when there is something like this. Yeah. Specific, like something on a global scale, a global pandemic. So I think it was maybe Zika. There's other instances in the past where they have used emergency use authorizations for investigational agents because they're in dire need. It's something that the FDA has in place when there's a dire need. Mm-hmm. And I also try to tell people it's been in one clinical trial over a course of, for instance, 4 months, which people point to how quick that is. But I tell people that if we're in a dire need. It did go through a whole phase 3 trial, 40,000 plus patients or healthy volunteers because of the vaccine, healthy volunteers. It still went through rigorous scientific evaluation. There's still benchmarks it has to hit in terms of efficacy and safety for it to be approved by the FDA for this emergency use. It's still being studied in terms of any safety adverse events that happen. They could pull the emergency use authorization at any time, but they haven't. For the COVID vaccines, there haven't been any huge, significant adverse events that have popped up because they're still monitoring this. I think there was once they talked about Bell's palsy was an adverse event for one of the vaccines, but it was at 0.004 for incidence rate. I think it was 4 people out of 40,000. Nothing significant has come out of hundreds of thousands of people have been vaccinated. There's been no severe adverse events. I think the most have been some allergic reactions, which they have prefaced it by saying, if you have a history of allergic reactions, then you may need to tell whoever administers the vaccine this. Make sure you stay at least 15 minutes afterwards so they can monitor to see if you have an allergic reaction afterwards. And I actually watched one of the FDA for the first vaccine that was approved. I actually watched the FDA advisory board review because they, again, for in the name of transparency, it's all posted on the FDA website. You can watch the data review. You can see all the data. You can see the discussion, the academic sciences talking about the data. You can see the ones that object to authorization, why. All that is transparent. It's all there if you want to take a look at it. I feel like a lot of the information is out there. So if you need to access it, it's there.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the trustworthy resources and kind of sifting through the noise, because we did chat about that earlier, there's a lot of junk that you kind of have to wade through, but there's also a lot of really good. I mean, I think Moderna was the first one that I started following literally, well, I won't say this time last year because we didn't know that it was going to be this crazy, but at least since last summer.
Fun fact about the Moderna vaccine.
Yes.
Did you know that a Black woman is the leading scientist who discovered that vaccine?
I did read that.
Yes.
I love that.
Would like to note that.
Yes.
Yes.
Black girl magic. I love it.
Yes. Okay, continue. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes. No. Of course. And so what is your advice as far as regular people kind of without medical degrees?
Yes. I think a lot of this is easy because I'm a scientist, so it's easy for me to say. I can just say, just go educate yourself. But it's not as easy as some other people because they don't have a.
And then especially when
background.
You talk about, when you talk about not knowing who exactly you can trust. Like, okay, I just read this blog post on this, but is this trustworthy information? So how do we kind of begin to discern a little bit more as far as what you can kind of take to the bank and what you can just toss to the side?
I don't know. I'm learning that now, which is why I wanted to kind of lend my expertise. When I was getting into all these Facebook scuffles, I realized that some people don't know where to turn and they don't know resources and they don't know science terms that I'm just so ingrained in my mind from years and years, because that's just, I've been in science for so long. It may come easy to me just because I'm in that area, but they don't have a full understanding of it. So they can't really put it all together and know how to use that to go forward. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to start some things I talk about on my blog and kind of start the clinical blueprint. Because I feel like I wanted to help distill some of these terms. So a lot of people don't know what a clinical trial is in terms of just how is it run? How is it managed? How is it beneficial? What is it telling me? How is it important to me? So I think it's hard because I've also had discussions with people who have come to me, again, people that argue, non-scientists who argue with me, a scientist, about science. They may come to me with a journal article from a science journal that, and I'm about to throw some science terms out there that I'll explain, that may have an impact factor of 2. And I'm quoting New England Journal of Medicine, which has an impact factor, and I don't remember what their impact factor is. It's probably 70. And I'm trying to then have to backtrack and try to explain how that is not on the same playing field. We're not talking about two different things. You may not even be interested in this, but impact factor is something that each journal has an impact factor. Scientific Journal, Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of Clinical Oncology. They all have impact factors. They're assigned an impact factor. And the impact factor tells you how stringent the research was in peer review. If there was a peer review at all, because there are journals that don't have any peer review, which they're called, I think, predatory journals. So they basically publish anything. So I could design a study and run into my kitchen and then write it up and publish it in these journals.
Just put it out there.
Just put it out there, anything. And so there's not the so impact factor kind of tells you how stringent was the peer review. A lot of times who was in the peer review, because it's high academic scientists who peer review, because the board of peer reviews of New England Journal of Medicine is not the same as something like a impact factor 2. And so it's like how scientifically rigorous this research was scrutinized, how good the research design was, things of that nature. So obviously you want something with a very, very, very high impact factor. And it's not the same as something that is published in something that may never have reviewed this. So a lot of times people point to things, because you've probably seen people point to stuff about supplements and the benefits of vitamin D. And those are just...
And zinc.
Those are published in these journals that aren't, it's not really clinically reviewed, or it's not going through any kind of rigorous test or review evaluation or anything of that nature. So those little things, which are actually big things, people with non-science backgrounds may not appreciate or understand. So you shouldn't be going to these journals with impact factor of 2. You should be going to these journals with impact factor of 70. But if you see something quoted in Science News, and don't get me started on how bad Science News is from many different standpoints, but you see something quoted or talked about in a Science News article, a lot of people don't know where the source comes from, because it could be two different types of sources and it could not be credible. But yeah, Science News is terrible because you usually get these non-scientists trying to then talk about science for lay people, but they don't really understand science themselves. And you get things like COVID during this time. I've seen COVID articles where they talk about the headline, because a lot of people just read headlines. That's another problem.
God.
They don't actually read the article. They just read headline.
Yes.
So I saw a headline which was circulating on Facebook. I saw people posting it. The headline was something like adverse side effects from the COVID vaccine may be more significant than we thought. And then that's like the headline. So everybody was like, oh my God, I'm freaking out. All the side effects of these vaccines. So everyone's posting, I'm not getting this vaccine. You see, this got all these side effects. But then you read the article and it was saying the side effects are muscle soreness, like stuff that's normal vaccine.
But that's with any vaccine. Like, yeah.
Any vaccine, like muscle weakness, a slight fever, stuff like that, normal vaccine stuff. And so for people, it's so many issues.
Yeah.
But to go back to your question, it's very difficult. I don't know what the answer is. So let me throw it back to you. How do you try to wade through and not fall kind of prey to the mistrust in terms of it hindering how you approach your health or make health decisions?
Well, my big thing is education. Research, research, research. And then you will probably be getting a friend request from me on Facebook because I tried to surround myself.
My ramblings haven't thrown you off.
No. I'm like, I need to be friends with her immediately. Because to be honest, I try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me. What I'm saying in different topics, like my mom, for example, she's a really big politics buff. And so throughout this whole election, whenever I would read something that I would be like, that does not sound right, I would call her or text her. They're saying that Trump can do this. Is this real? And she'd be like, mm-mm, girl, this is how it, you know? So you do read it. I mean, I kind of have my news that I stick with, and it's not just MSNBC, y'all. I do the other ones too, but I try to look at their sources, and just typically if it's something that kind of gives me pause, then that's when I will kind of go down the rabbit hole and just do the research myself, look at the sources. And I will say, I am not good with the scientific journals because all the terms start to run.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. So I try to go with trustworthy sources that will literally break those studies down. So this is a study that we're talking about. These are the results. Yes. And this is what this means for you, the regular everyday person. So that's kind of what I mean. Yeah. I think I've been pretty good trying to discern. So I had my third baby last year. So that was another big thing. Yeah. Doing the research on just like pregnancy and the different drugs. And so this actually last baby was, I like researched my heart out with that. Then once we got close to him when he was going to be here, then we thought I was going to have to do it by myself. So I had my birth plan. I was like, nope, I do not want that. Because that's not necessary. You can just take that off. For me, that's empowering. And then always making sure you write your questions down.
Yeah.
My favorite type of articles are, I'm going to see my OBGYN. What do I need to ask him or her? I'm going to see a physical therapist. What are the questions that I need to ask about? What kind of certification?
Yes.
Those are the kinds of things that I try to do just to kind of advocate for myself so that I can go home feeling like, okay, this is something that, and I have stopped too. I mean, before, of course, a couple of years back, they would prescribe something and you're just like, okay, cool. I'll take it. Now that I don't do, I do try to research. I remember when I was pregnant with my first, I had really bad morning sickness and she wanted to give me Zofran. And I was just, is that the one that, you know, all of the, the commercials
yes. are like,
if you've suffered from death or extreme disease or whatever, whatever. And so I did the research on it myself and it just wasn't something that I was comfortable with. And at the end of the day, the morning sickness was just sit your butt down. So I had to take it easy for that first trimester. And so she did prescribe it and I never went to the pharmacy and picked it up. And you go back for your follow-up appointment and they're like, how are you doing? Oh, I'm still nauseous, but you know, I'm making it work. So I think definitely, like you were saying, researching. And when you come up on something that gives you pause, continue to ask questions and
continue
do not go
to ask
Facebook.
Questions. Let me tell you a little secret about medical doctors. They
yes.
don't know a lot of science.
Yeah.
So I remember back helping my college friends when they were studying for the MCATs and stuff, helping them with the science part because mm-hmm. they don't know science. And yeah, I tell people always stay up on things and research because even if a doctor say, I'm going to prescribe this to you, know what other options there are. Because in their mind, they may really think that this is the best option, but you may say, oh, but I've heard about this. Can you tell me why you prefer that over this? Have yeah. them explain it to you and have them talk to you about their thought process in it, because there may be something, and that may not even be something they're doing wrong, but they may have this set of ideas or this set of thoughts or why they're doing it, but they're not considering something they don't even know about you or know that's going on with you or have considered that may make this option better for you or no option, not anything at all. So it should be a dialogue. You should have a dialogue with your doctor and it shouldn't just be you go in, you say what's wrong and then they say, we'll take this. It should be a continuous dialogue. So yeah, I try to tell people always stay up on, don't pressure your doctor. Because that's another thing. Don't pressure a doctor to say, I heard about this other option on television. I want this. But then again, make it a dialogue. Tell me why you prefer this over this, why this is better. Even though I think maybe I should take this because of this reason and have them explain to you or disagree with you on why they think it's not a good idea. That way, you know why that is the case and you're empowered. And you come out that office learning a whole lot of things that you didn't know that could come up in the future that may be applicable to something in the future. So that's what I tell people all the time, because I think people don't do that.
Definitely. That's a mm-hmm. really good point. And so I do want to chat about the clinical blueprint. So tell me about that project and then tell me about your blog too, because I know you said you started back blogging.
Yes, I started back blogging. This is actually my second blog because I had a blog years and years and years ago. I was like a film blogger years ago. That was a whole nother life. That was very fun. So I recently, mid last year, thought I wanted to start a blog again because I missed that whole creative outlet for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm very left-brained, but I also want to be creative. So I want to also flex that muscle. So I wanted to start a blog. So my blog is called Creating Stories. It's kind of a combination of, I talk about relationships, culture, because I'm really big in the culture area mm-hmm. in terms of my interest in the arts and the influences of the arts by people of color, specifically Black people. And then, but also pieces in activism. I did some work last year fundraising for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So I wanted to do a lot of work and promote healthcare activism, being a medical advocate, medical education, adult medical and healthcare literacy, and things of that nature. So out of that came when I was, again, having my Facebook heated discussions, realizing that a lot of people don't understand science and right. medicine, and it's important for them to do so when you come up to situations like with COVID, where there is this misunderstanding or lack of knowledge in science may be detrimental to being a medical advocate for yourself or getting the best health care for yourself, because people are refusing to take the vaccine or not thinking COVID is a big deal, which I think if they had a better understanding of science and medicine, that you kind of come at it with a different perspective. So I wanted to kind of start this project called a Clinical Blueprint, where I kind of distill some of those complex science ideas for lay people. Again, not with the intention of telling you what to do or telling you what you need to believe, but giving you tools to kind of understand science and medicine more so you can make more informed healthcare decisions. So when you read science news, you can understand some of the pitfalls that science journalists fall into, how they don't sometimes explain things fully, or sometimes things are misrepresented from the actual study in how they're writing things. So you can pick that up so you can understand and make informed conclusions from things. That's where my idea came from. And I'm just getting started, but I wanted to find ways to kind of tell people about what clinical trials are. How do you find medical resources? Like we just talked about medical resources, because it's all about the source, because you can find something to support any argument. So I can make the most outlandish argument about COVID and I can find something that backs it up. But it's about finding actual credible sources and how you do that. And it's just how you become more knowledgeable and not making it cumbersome, but making it interesting to people. Because I think for a lot of people, science is not interesting, which is partially why people don't take the time to be educated in that area, because it may not be something they're interested in. But to try to make it a little more interesting and more applicable, or show how it's applicable to your life. So that's my whole goal of it. So I'm getting started. But that's what I was thinking about. And I think it will be helpful and beneficial.
I love that. And so we will drop the links for your blog. And then do you have sign up for the clinical blueprint so we can sign up for it from when it comes out?
Yes. So okay, I will. Yeah. So with my blog, it's creatingstories.com. There is a sign up for my blog updates, which will include things for the clinical blueprint. So every now and then I'll drop little things, little educational nuggets for people about that. And I take, if you have any questions about science, clinical trials, pharmacy, pharmaceuticals that I can answer, I'm happy to.
I love that. That's awesome. And then do you have podcast or a YouTube channel or anything like that?
I have not for the clinical blueprint as of now.
Okay.
Just getting started with that.
Well, I was just gonna, I don't want to like tell you how to, well, this is what you need to do. But I was just
ahead. What, you tell me what would be beneficial.
I was people. Just
like, what would you like to, what would you like to see?
For me, I would absolutely adore a podcast more than a YouTube channel, just because I can consume it while I'm feeding the kids and all that stuff. But I would love a podcast that broke down, you know what I'm saying? Like these different issues that we talk about with the science of it.
Yes.
Medical part, yes, but advocating for yourself, but breaking down the science and the terms, because there's a lot of these terms that have kind of become buzzwords,
yes.
I think, in the last, 8 months? So I just think that would really take off. And then especially from a Black woman perspective, your voice is so rare, but so needed.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I was thinking about doing an online course, which is will be kind of something where you can download and listen to me talking or rambling.
That would be super cool.
Something like that. You're going to be my nine science consultant on what do the people need to know?
Yeah,
I'm going to come to you.
I'm an expert in the layperson.
That's what we're going to do.
Definitely do that. Yes, 100%. Well, this has been so much fun. I know we had some technical difficulties in the beginning that y'all, my listeners, y'all don't know about, but we made it work. So this was so awesome. Thank you so much again. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to be here.
And so we, of course, will drop your links in the show notes. And then, social media. Are you on Instagram or anything like that?
Yes, I'm everywhere. I am on Instagram, creating.stories. Again, my website is creatingstories.com. If you want to check out my LinkedIn, you're like, I don't believe she's really a PhD. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm credentialed, guys. Shayla Thomas from Atlanta on LinkedIn. You can find me there if you want to make any kind of professional contact as well. But yeah, those are my contacts.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again. And for my listeners, I will talk to y'all next time. Bye. Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're new here, join our tribe and hit that subscribe button. And be sure to come and find me on Instagram at itsbrittany24 and tell me what you thought of this week's episode. I value your opinions and your feedback, so feel free to leave a comment or shoot me a DM and let me know your thoughts. Until next time.